From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on January 27th when the New York State Public High School Athletic Association approved some new rules. Some of those rules are aimed at protecting the health of kids, and the rules go into effect this spring. Specifically, they're looking at things like pitch counts in baseball and mandatory rest time. Now, if you're a parent, you're especially aware of how much pressure there can be on kids when it comes to athletics. Many kids are on multiple travel teams in the same sport. Saturdays can have games start early in the morning, another around lunchtime, another in the afternoon. Weeknights can find little time for homework. Sports can be demanding. For years, the school and sports communities, medical community, they've debated about what to do to reduce the number of concussions or reduce the risk of overuse and related injury. So these new rules are part of that mission. But are they the right decisions? Some parents and athletes have already criticized the rules, and we want to talk about that this hour. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Dr. Greg Nicandri is a sports medicine physician at UR Medicine, who also played some sports in your day, yeah, growing up. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I graduated at Webster High School and played both football and baseball there.
How many overuse or use injuries that you're aware of?
I actually was pretty lucky. I went through with maybe a couple of knee sprains and ankle sprains, but nothing major.
Very good. Well, I know you do a lot of work on young athletes in our community, and let me welcome a couple who are here with us. Caleb Punter is an 18-year-old at Webster Schrader. Plays baseball and basketball. He's had surgery for a torn labrum in a shoulder and a few other injuries, broken thumb, dislocated finger. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were both from basketball.
Okay, so we'll get a chance to talk about that in probably more gory detail than I'd like, but, you know, that's fine. Also here is the toughest 15-year-old. You're 15, Ashton?
Yeah.
15 years old. Ashton Fantagrossi is a sophomore at Webster Thomas, plays football. He suffered an ACL tear, and I don't mean to laugh. Like, I can barely read this well without getting lightheaded. You underwent a hamstring graft to repair it in September.
Yes.
How was that?
It was pretty nerve-wracking, but, you know, once I learned what it was and, you know, how it was going to happen, it, you know, wasn't that bad.
And how you feel now?
Pretty good. It's healing pretty well. It's coming along good.
All right, so let's see here. That's maybe 5 months now. Is that how long it's been since that surgery for you? But in September, right?
So yeah, late September.
All right, so almost coming up on 5 months. And what are you able to do now physically?
Well, I still can't cut or make any sharp movements, mm-hmm. really. Can't really run or sprint.
Can you jog lightly?
I don't know yet.
Okay,
You know, I still got to go to PT and clear that with...
Do you feel like you could if you had to?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm starting to be able to do, you know, like body weight squats. But, you know, I still got to take it easy, you know.
And your injury hasn't had you thinking, you know, I don't know if I need football. I don't know if I need sports.
For a little while, but, you know, I enjoyed the team aspect a lot. And so that's something that, you know, is, you know, that's why I'm still thinking about playing, you know.
Absolutely. Very good. And Caleb, for you, again, you had a surgery for a torn labrum in your shoulder. You were a pitcher?
Yeah.
You are a pitcher?
Yes, I do pitch.
Okay. And when was that surgery?
That was in March.
All right. So you're coming up on a year.
Yeah, I think 10 months.
Okay. And how are you doing?
Good. Yeah. I've been going through a throwing progression, which I'm getting pretty close to the end of. So I'm hoping to get to 100% within a few weeks here.
Okay. And when you had your injury, was there part of you wondering if that was the end of sports for you, or what did you think?
I mean, I never really thought that. I want to play in college as mm-hmm. well, so, you know, I really wanted to get back as soon as I could, so I just thought if I work hard, I'll be able to get back to where I was.
Okay. Red-handed or left-handed?
Left-handed.
Oh, see, there's work for you somewhere.
Yeah.
For all of you lefties. How hard do you throw? Pre-injury, how hard could you throw?
I was throwing low to mid-80s.
Okay. Throwing pretty hard.
Yeah.
Moving the ball pretty good. I mean, are you a power pitcher for high school, or are you a junk baller, or both?
Yeah, more of power. I mean, being left-handed, I have a lot of natural run on my ball, mm-hmm. so that with throwing in the 80s, I could throw pretty well.
Now, Caleb, I know you've certainly seen the best pitchers in the world. You know, I'm a big Cleveland Indians fan. My Danny Salazar is one of the hardest throwers in the major leagues and had Tommy John surgery. I mean, a lot of guys come back from big surgeries like Tommy John. So maybe in your mind, surgery at some point was a possibility. I don't know what the bounce back rate from labrum surgery is, but if you're serious and you're thinking about college sports at some point, were you thinking, you know, I could get hurt, lots of pitchers get hurt, it's part of it, you come back stronger, or are you thinking, you know, pre-injury, did you dread that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was always a possibility. I mean, I had arm problems for a pretty long time now, but I mean, I was just hoping that if I did have something like this, I'd be able to work through it and just come back stronger.
And you think you will?
Yeah, I think I will. Yes.
Right now, what's the status of, you know, what you're able to throw?
So I'm throwing about the width of a soccer field, because that's just what we're doing right now for school. So,
long toss?
Yeah, long toss. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to ramp it up all the way yet, yep. But I'm getting close.
And again, if I asked you to throw a fastball right now, would you be scared of how it would feel, or do you feel like you could do it if you had to?
Yeah, I mean, I could do it. It just wouldn't be as hard as I'm looking to get to yet, but yeah. There's not a whole lot of pain there.
Okay, all right. So it is amazing what medicine can do. There's no question. I mean, just the concept of what Tommy John surgery is blows your mind when you understand what we could do with the human body and how amazing all that is. And Dr. Nicandri, you got two young athletes who have gone through a lot. They're going to go back out there and play. And who can blame them, right? I mean, they're talking about sports as community, sports as part of a team, part of that community. It becomes part of their life. What should the mission be of medicine, schools, and athletics to make sure, hey, they have that if they want it, but we are not putting more kids in position to get hurt?
I mean, I think we need to look at kind of rules, equipment, conditioning, everything that we can do on the front end to prevent injuries from happening in the first place. And if we can't prevent the injury, then obviously you want to figure out the best techniques for getting people through their injury, rehabbed, and back and better, hopefully stronger as they, you know, than they were before. I mean, our philosophy, we've got a great rehabilitation team. Our philosophy, you know, basically works with athletic trainers, physical therapists, strength and conditioning coaches, with the goal of saying, yeah, you know, this injury is really bad. But we want to take it as an opportunity to really focus on your body, to optimize it so that hopefully we can prevent any further injuries and further time off and make you a better athlete in the end, throwing harder, running faster, jumping higher.
A lot of our focus this hour is going to be on baseball and football, and we've got a baseball athlete, a football athlete here. But I think, you know, this is a conversation that extends to all athletics because injuries happen in all different sports. But I do want to take a look at some of the changes that have either been proposed or that we will see coming here. And let me just read from what I've had, and maybe Dr. Nicandri can kind of jump in and help us understand, just sort of the practical possible impact of some of these. So again, these come from the New York State Public High School Athletic Association regarding baseball. The old rule was 12 inning maximum per day and no more than 18 innings over a 6-day period. Pitch counts were not required to be tallied previously. And the new rules that were approved on January 27th going into effect this spring. And so they're going to start mandating pitch counts. Rules limit pitch counts for high school players to mandate rest. So if you look at freshmen, JV versus varsity, there's different levels, different rules of allowance, how many pitches you throw, how many nights rest you need. What to you, doctor, are the big headlines here that come out of this?
So I think, you know, a lot of states have gone to this. The old rule is kind of a joke. It was an innings rule. And we all know if you play baseball, you know, if you have an easy inning, you can be out in 11 pitches. And if you have a rough inning, it could be 60 pitches. So the fact that you pitched four innings or pitched six innings, it has no effect on the actual number of pitches. And, you know, the equation for injury is with sports like baseball, it's an overuse problem. So it's a combination of the velocity and the number of pitches that you throw. So how much work are you putting through your shoulder and your elbow? It's almost basic physics. And so, you know, the theory behind this is if you limit the number of pitches, you're limiting the number of work on that body part, and you're decreasing the risk for overuse injuries. And so you're mandating rest. And I think, you know, for baseball, it's interesting that they, you know, have a rule for baseball. If you look at overall sports injuries, if you're looking for a sport for your kid to play and you're a risk-averse person, baseball has like the lowest injury rate of almost all the sports that you can play in high school. But the problem is, if you look at when the injuries happen, it's pitchers and it's, pitchers who throw hard.
If you have 10 surgeries The next 10 surgeries of baseball athletes, how many of those 10 will be pitchers?
Probably 8.
Wow. Okay. All right. So that's why we're looking so much at pitch counts here. And I want to read a comment that State Baseball Chairman Ed Dopp made with some pushback here. Here's his quote, and we'll get Dr. Nicandri's thoughts on that. Quote, "There's been a lot of concern expressed to me, and I share it, with the night's rest portion of the rules. We're concerned that in some areas of the state, primarily due to weather, the schedule gets condensed pretty short. We're worried, quite frankly, that some schools could run out of pitching," end quote. Doctor?
Certainly, you know, there's going to be logistical problems, especially in our area. You know, these things were developed in Florida. They don't have the same problems that we do up here. And I think New York State has kind of adopted this rule a little later than some other states. And, you know, they may have to look at certain situations. You know, there are things within those rules that allow the pitch count to be extended for, you know, playoffs and things like that. So I don't think it's an absolute. We need to see what the effect is on injury. I think the big thing is we need to record the data. You need to know what the injury rate is, and you need to know what the exposures are and how things are going, and then look at it in a couple of years and modify as necessary.
Yeah, and some of the other criticism I've seen is that this idea of a pitch count number has always been a little arbitrary. Here's from Fox Sports, just looking at the history of pitch counts, goes back to Dr. James Andrews, the renowned orthopedic surgeon. He was the one who suggested 100 in a 1999 study titled Elbow Injuries in Young Baseball Players, alongside James Whiteside for that study. And, you know, 18 years later, people still talk about the 100 pitch limit, even at the major league level. To the extent that, where is this story? This story from last spring was amazing. Here it is. Last spring, the Los Angeles Dodgers had a rookie pitcher, Ross Stripling, in his major league debut, who was at 7 1/3 no-hit innings. And manager Dave Roberts pulled him and basically said he came to 100 pitches. He didn't throw more than 78 in the spring, and he only threw 70 innings last year. 100 pitches was our number, basically come hell or high water, even at the major league level. But people are wondering, is that just an arbitrary number? Whether it's an adult in the major leagues or kids developing, do we have good data to know what these numbers mean?
I think there's actually pretty good data with that. You know, it did first start out as, you know, Dr. Andrews' expert opinion, and then it turned into, you know, let's survey a bunch of coaches, medical professionals, and see what they think the numbers are. And it still came out to that around 100 level. And now people are actually recording injury rates, and they're recording, you know, the actual work on the arm. And it does seem to correlate with those numbers. So, you know, it passes the eyeball test. What people thought 18 years ago is actually bearing out in real numbers now. So
interesting. And you, I take it then you probably don't buy it when you hear a oh, man. Who was the Red Sox had a Japanese pitcher who came in who a few years back who was
Daisuke.
Yeah. Was this idea that Daisuke comes in and he throws 160 pitches an outing, or he's thrown 200 pitches. Curt Schilling used to say that, you know, you coddle a pitcher, you set them up for injury, whereas you get the arm used to the motion, they can handle it. You don't buy that.
No, because it's all about stress and strain on the actual on the ligaments. Ligaments are a fixed structure. When you throw 80 miles an hour or above, you're at almost the maximum threshold for that ulnar collateral ligament every single time you throw. And, you know, you can make muscles stronger. You can make your neural connections a little bit, you know, better, so your arm slows down from that velocity a little better. There are some adaptions, but at some point you reach the threshold of human adaption, and you know you're going to get an injury. I used to, you know, when I looked at fantasy teams and I played fantasy baseball, I would think about, okay, who am I going to draft and put on my team? Well, I don't want somebody who's going to be injured. So I would look at the guys who threw 215, 230 innings the last 2, 3, 4 years. And you'd have a higher chance that those guys are going to get hurt, that Johan Santana's, you know, people like that. You know, obviously certain individuals are, you know, outside the realm of normal, but you know, if you're playing the game of probability, somebody who throws a lot of pitches very hard is going to be much more likely to get injured than somebody who throws less.
Did Dave Roberts make the right call in pulling his rookie pitcher after 7 1/3?
I think so.
Okay, well, let's see if Caleb
agrees.
They've
got a lot of money invested in that guy.
they do, and you know, they're looking out for him. Caleb, you throw 7 1/3, no-hit innings in your debut, college, or someday in the major leagues, and your manager says, sorry, Caleb, you're at 100 here. I mean, you got to give him the ball, but how do you feel about it?
I mean, definitely as a competitor, as I'm sure he is, you want to go out and finish that game, whether it's good for your health or not. So, I mean, in that moment, I definitely wouldn't want to come out of the game.
If he gives you the choice, you're staying in.
Yeah, I'm staying okay. in.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of questions come up quite often, even at the major league level. But before I jump back to the student athletes who are with us, let me welcome in a guest who's on the line with us. Dr. Mike Maloney is chief of sports medicine at UR Medicine. He treats athletes of all ages. He's the team physician for the Rochester Red Wings and several area college sports teams. Great to have you, Dr. Maloney. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've been talking about pitch counts. We're going to get to football coming up here. We've been talking about pitch counts. And one thing that I haven't asked yet, and I would ask both you and then Dr. Greg Nicandri the same question here, is, you know, we can look at Dice K, or you can look at a story of a major league pitcher who's 23 and gets pulled at 100 pitches even though he's throwing a no-hitter in his major league debut. But when someone is 15 or 16 or 17, what's the difference in risk to an arm and all of the structures within that arm, that, as far as we know, Dr. Maloney?
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with athletes, you know, 15, 16, the big thing is that their joints and their bones and muscles are still developing, and they just aren't built to kind of take that amount of stress at one time. And, you know, it's something, unfortunately, we see far too often. I'll see some high school athletes who will come in and they've thrown 160 pitches in a game, and then they'll throw 2 or 3 days later. It's I think it's just an unrealistic expectation for athletes at that level to be able to perform like that.
Is that the highest number you've seen at least recorded, around 160 pitches?
I've seen 175.
Wow. I mean, that is remarkable. Caleb, do you know what the most you've ever thrown in a game is?
Right around 100. I mean, I've mostly been a closer. I didn't start too many games, okay. So right around 100.
Okay. 175 seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't throw that many.
I mean, I don't think there's a single... I'm certain of it. I bet you the Major League Baseball high mark this year was probably around 140, something like that, if I'm guessing. Imagine a 17-year-old throwing 175 pitches. And just reading here, a new study finding from last March, so this is about a year old now, a new study found a dramatic increase in the number of adolescents undergoing Tommy John surgery to repair a pitching-related elbow injury in recent years, outstripping growth among major league pitchers. The study was performed by researchers at Columbia University Medical Center, and it was published in the January 2016 online issue of the American Journal of Sports Medicine. So we're seeing a lot more Tommy John. Dr. Maloney, for those of us, you know, who are vaguely familiar, and then for those of us who are not familiar, what is Tommy John?
So a Tommy John surgery refers to a reconstructive procedure on the throwing elbow that is necessary because the main stabilizing ligament has been torn or stretched. And I think that this trend that's reported in the study, really we've been seeing this probably for about 10 or 15 years, that younger patients, even down into 13, 14-year-olds, are sustaining injuries either to the growth plate or if their growth plates are closed to that ligament and requiring surgery. And unfortunately, there's a really powerful misperception that the surgery is going to bring them back and have them throwing harder than they did before. And you'll get athletes and parents who come in asking you to do the surgery on their son just to help them throw harder. And you know, it really is something that takes a lot of time and education, and this is not a procedure that any athlete should want to undergo.
But let me ask both doctors about this, because this is my concern now as a parent. I've got a 5-year-old son. If he's got my DNA, he may not be a power thrower. I remember going to Jacobs Field, and I just unloaded and lit up the gun, and it said 64, and I was pretty sure it was broken. Probably not. There's probably no legs in anything I'm throwing. I thought 64 was throwing pretty hard. I'm not throwing the way Caleb is, in the low to mid-80s at the age of 17, 18?
18.
All right, so 18 years old, he's throwing in the low to mid-80s, and that's amazing. My concern would be, even if my son wants to play, let's say he wants to pitch, you start to hear stories at the low minor leagues, high school athletes, college athletes saying, you know, Tommy John is something that you might just have to have, but you might come back stronger. Whereas 20 years ago, you talked about Tommy John and the concern is your career could be over. You might not pitch again for 2 years. Now it's almost like, well, you know, if that's part of it, that's part of it. And my concern would be that we're almost embracing that to the point of, well, if I get overused, if I have to have it, at least I get it out of the way now. How do you view it, Dr. Maloney?
So we do get that kind of commentary a lot. And I did my training with Dr. Job in Los Angeles, who actually invented Tommy John surgery. And we would spend a week in spring training with him in Dodgertown, and we'd walk around the Dodgertown campus, and the guys would come up to him, and they'd always they'd thank him. They'd say, "Dr. Job, you know, thank you so much for my surgery. I'm throwing harder than I ever did before." And he would kind of look at you, and he'd say, you know, when they'd walk away, he'd smile, and he said, "You know why they say that?" And I had no idea at the time, but the problem is they had this repetitive trauma over time where the ligament gets looser and looser. And maybe 2 or 3 years ago, these professional throwers were throwing 94 or 95, and the next year it's 92 or 93. And then by the time they finally get diagnosed and they get treated with surgery, they may have been down to 89 or 90. Once they get the anatomy reconstructed and their elbow is restabilized, they come back and they're throwing that 94, 95 again. And it's, again, just highlights that this is a gradual attenuation of that ligament complex that occurs over time. Not that it also can't be one acute event, but more commonly, this is something that maybe progresses over a couple seasons, starts when they're younger throwers, but by the time it gets picked up, diagnosed, and treated, their velocity has come down to a point that they're not recalling that they used to be able to throw harder. So we're really not making them throw faster than they otherwise would have if they had their own anatomy.
And Dr. Nicandri, how do you feel about this possible double-edged sword of the medical community doing these amazing things, but then, you know, kind of giving kids this idea, because of the great work that you do, that this may just be what happens, and maybe I'll be stronger, and who cares if I go home and throw another 100 pitches, or, you know, if I'm breaking some of the rules or the guidelines they have?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of misperceptions that we run into. I think some of the data shows that, you know, the results that you get in a major league pitcher who might get back to throwing the same velocity, albeit, you know, usually about 18 months to 24 months later, so it's a two-year recovery process. You know, if you do that in high school athletes who do not have the same access to a trainer 24/7, a nutritionist 24/7, you know, strength coaches and all of that, they, you know, the rates of recovery to the pre-injury level in, you know, high school or Division III athletes, certainly not as high. And that's what, you know, I try to counsel, you know, patients with. And
do students think that they are going to get back to that level when they come to you?
I think everybody does, and you want to encourage them to think that they can get back to that level. I mean, that's all of our goal. We're all going to work as hard as possible. But, you know, you've also got to be a realist. And so when you're having the conversation before surgery, we say these are the realistic numbers. Now, obviously, we're going to try to make you an exception. But, you know, by no means do you want to have this as an elective procedure to make you throw faster.
Let me ask both Caleb and Dr. Maloney then, because we've gotten Dr. Nicandri's thoughts on these, the updated rules that came down on January 27th from the New York State Public High School Athletic Association regarding pitch counts and mandatory rests for pitchers at different ages. And again, you know, if you're a younger pitcher, if you're 12, 13, 14, different rules for how much rest and how many pitches you can throw. Dr. Maloney, how do you feel about it?
I think it's an excellent first step. It's an acknowledgement that this has been a problem for a lot of years, and it's finally a rule that has some teeth behind it. I think maybe you mentioned that, you know, if you are found to be in violation, you forfeit the outcome of the game. It's an automatic loss for the team. And there's no question that, you know, the idea of young athletes, especially in upstate New York, being subjected to games, you know, because of rainouts, you could have 4 or 5 games over 4 or 5 days, and you may not have that many pitchers, and kids will be pitching on short rest and could tally up to, you know, maybe a couple hundred pitches over a couple of outings. And so I think this is a really good first step. By no means is, you know, our pitch counts the only way that we can kind of manage this. I mean, it doesn't take into account when someone's, you know, in between innings or in between outings. It doesn't take into account the work they may be doing with a sibling or a parent or a coach trying to work on certain things. But at least from a game competition standpoint, it's finally put in some criteria to try to protect these young athletes, and I think that's the goal.
Okay. Caleb, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, I also agree that these pitch counts are beneficial. I mean, when kids, the pitchers are out there and throwing a really good game or in a tight game, you know, they want to stay out there and keep throwing. But if they're at 100 or over that, then you got to sometimes prioritize the health over the game there, I think.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Dr. Maloney.
I commend Caleb for saying that, because I think what the rule does is it takes the decision-making out of the hands of the athlete, out of the hands of the parent, and puts it into the coaches. And, you know, hopefully they respect the rules. But, you know, it's hard when you're a young athlete and, you know, you want to be out there. You want to do everything you can for your team, and it may not always be in your best interest. So I think the other important point about this regulation is that it does take the decision-making away from the athlete, which is good.
Yeah, Dr. Maloney, that just makes me think of how many times we've seen over the years an NFL quarterback get his, quote, bell rung, which everyone now recognizes to be signs of concussion. And, you know, he's going, well, no, I'll stay. And how many times over the years the coaches have said, well, you know, he expressed no concern to us. Athletes don't do that for the most part. Athletes love to tell you that they're okay. And I think when we're talking, whether it's professional sports or we're talking about youth sports all the way down to the young levels, you know, sometimes you have to take the decision-making out of their hands. Sometimes there has to be medical standards, and that's what this hour is about. I want to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and tell you about some other things going on that you should know about when it comes to protecting health and maybe giving other options for kids who are playing sports. We're going to find out if Ashton Fantagrossi thinks that more flag football is the way to go at different levels. We'll talk about that and prevent a concussion and other use, overuse, injuries as well. Our guests include Ashton Fantagrossi. He's 15. He's a sophomore at Webster Thomas, where he plays football. Caleb Punter, you just heard him talking, an 18-year-old senior at Webster Schrader, plays baseball and basketball. And Dr. Greg Nicandri is in studio with us. He's a sports medicine physician at UR Medicine. Dr. Mike Maloney on the line with us is chief of sports medicine at UR Medicine. Our only break of the hour, and we're coming right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, in our first hour, a group of Republicans led by familiar names like James Baker are urging Republicans in Congress and the White House to adopt a carbon tax and to get serious about climate change. Will it work? Can they convince conservatives to get on board? Then in our second hour, we're talking about the Rock Awards. We'll tell you all about it. 5 years in, who's nominated? We'll talk about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dr. Nicandri was reminding me of an important point here. As we talk about protecting students, protecting kids, making sure sports are appropriate at different ages and levels, and not allowing for overuse injury, long-term injury, Dr. Nicandri points out that, you know, you got young girls, and girls are going to be at risk too. We've been talking about the two boys in the room and talking about, you know, professional men's sports, but this is boys and girls.
Right. You know, I have two young girls, and, you know, a lot of attention gets put on the boy sports. But, you know, I certainly see a lot of softball injuries. I think, you know, historically, people would say, well, you know, softball, you throw underhand when you pitch, and that's a natural motion because the elbow is a hinge, and therefore, you know, maybe you're not putting the same stress. Well, you know, in studies that we've done now, you put just as much stress on that elbow thrown underhand as you do thrown overhand. And there are no innings rules for girls. There's no rest time for girls. Girls in some of these travel leagues will, you know, if you've got one pitcher, sometimes they have carry one to two pitchers per team.
Yeah.
And they'll pitch two games on Saturday and two games on Sunday, and they'll throw 100 or more pitches in both games. And, you know, they're good. They're dominant. The girls I see in clinic are some of the best in the country. They've got scholarships for, you know, to go play at Michigan or wherever. And, you know, when they come see me, they have completely attenuated ulnar collateral ligament, and they have arthritis. Their elbow looks like a 40 or 50-year-old instead of a 17 or 18-year-old. And, of course, it's right when they're in their junior season, applying for colleges, trying to secure their scholarships. And you can't, you know, you do Tommy John surgery then, and the scholarship's gone.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we need to extend some of this to women's sports as well.
Absolutely. And let me just follow up on that point. First of all, when I watch softball pitchers, they are amazing to me. The speed and the movement that they have for a motion that obviously I haven't pitched in that way, but I just find it amazing. They throw hard. The ball moves. I'm a little surprised to hear you say that, given the fact that it's as violent as it is or as fast as it is, underhand, you know, is more of a natural motion for the arm, whereas overhand pitching is not. Is it because of just how much violence there is that it sort of negates the fact that it might be more natural?
Well, and it's also not truly underhand. There's a ton of torque that comes through your hips and your lower body, and you're almost throwing sidearm underhand. When you actually, you know, slow it down and look at it frame by frame, and everybody knows how bad sidearm throwing is for the ulnar collateral ligament. Sidearmers who throw very hard don't last very long because that's stressing that ligament, you know, right on its line of tension. Same thing's happening with these women.
Dr. Maloney, you want to weigh in on that too?
Yeah, Greg makes an excellent point, and there's no question that we are starting to see, you know, these injuries in the young female athletes, and I think he makes, you know, great sense that these type of rules should be applied to the females. I mean, I watch them pitch, and my arm hurts when I watch them. It's really remarkable to see what they're able to do, and there's no question that we need to pay attention to that population as well.
Well, let's talk about a different sport. Let's talk about football, and football gets a lot of attention for concussion. But there are plenty of injuries that come along with playing football, as you heard from Ashton Fanagrossi. If you missed it earlier this hour, he is recovering now from a September surgery in which he has suffered an ACL tear and had to undergo a hamstring graft. But you said you're feeling pretty good now. I want to ask you about this, Ashton. I'm looking at USA Football, the national governing body for amateur football, created a new format called Modified Tackle for the youth game in response to declining participation and the increasing public belief that the game is not safe enough for kids to play. So the first modified tackle scrimmages were held last September with youth teams in Cleveland, and a national rollout is several years away. And the changes are, you know, that it's closer to flag football. 6 to 9 players on the field instead of 11, smaller fields, no kickoffs, no punts, so you don't get that sort of high velocity flying at each other, you know, for those kind of plays. Players start each play in a crouching position instead of a three-point stance. Coaches can rotate players in different positions during the games to give everyone a chance to carry the ball and avoid mismatches between larger and smaller kids. So overall, there's less speed, less momentum in which bodies are hitting each other, more one-on-one tackling, and it's not flag football, but it's closer to that. What does that sound like to you? You can be blunt with me.
Well,
and get right on that microphone for me if you could.
It sounds like it is overall, you know, a much safer way to play football. But I think in doing that, you'd be taking out a lot of the things that kids who play football are passionate about. A lot of kids I know play football because they need to get aggression out or something like that. And that's their way of, you know, hitting people and getting their aggression out. And if you take that away, or dim it down in a way, it would be not necessarily bad, but just it wouldn't be as enjoyable for a lot of the kids who are more passionate about the sport. And you know, it depends on what position you're playing as well. Like, I'm a left guard. I don't get a lot of momentum, you know, right, when I'm playing, yeah, but there is a lot of force because it's usually the biggest guys, except for the, you know, the running backs and the linebackers. Those people slam into each other from totally opposite ends of the fields, and they're just, you know, there's a lot of damage and concussions there with the high speed positions. But I haven't played them, so,
okay,
you know.
Does this sound, what I just described, does that sound like real football to you?
Kind of. You know, it is in a sense that, you know, you're still running the ball and making a touchdown, but it takes a lot of the, you know, the history of football out of actually playing it. There's, you know, football is the aggressive sport that people get beat up in. You know, if you take that away, then, you know, in a way it's not really football anymore. It's more of a friendly sport. You know, football is meant for people who are tough and can handle it.
Okay. Well, let me ask the doctors what they think about these possible modifications. Dr. Nicandri, are there pluses and minuses to you with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that we're looking at this here is that, you know, essentially concussions. Concussion rate in football is very high, and it has the potential to, by cumulative effects, be a pretty devastating injury later on, you know, down the line as people get older, and as we're seeing that in NFL players. And we know that the majority of concussions happen at high speed plays, you know, between the, you know, 20 yard line and the other 20 yard line. And, you know, usually linebackers and running backs, as Ashton mentioned, who are kind of running into each other, and they usually happen either, you know, being tackled or getting tackled. And so if you want to limit concussions, you want to limit speed and force, and limit the amount of hitting and tackling. So, you know, one argument is say, well, why doesn't everybody just play flag football? And so I think there's some validity to that. But when you look at other sports who've done similar things, like hockey in Canada, you know, has no check leagues, and you actually see that once the kids go from a no check league to a check league, that there's actually a higher rate of injuries and concussions as they transition up, because those folks haven't learned how to avoid the hit, absorb the hit, or may not be, you know, properly positioned to do that. So I think that's why this other brand of football has been borne out, because it's an opportunity. They're talking about this for youth football, where, thank God, in general, youth football, the risk of injury tends to be lower. We don't know the cumulative effect of concussions in youth football, and you've got to think, on a growing, developing brain, if one does happen, there's the potential for a worse effect, but luckily the incidence is less. But this does kind of try to mesh a best of both worlds of, you know, kind of decreasing risk by decreasing the number of collisions and possibly the force of those collisions. The question that needs to be answered is, you know, USA Football is doing this because they see a declining in participation. Yeah. Are people going to buy into that and say, this really is football and I enjoy playing this? Or are they going to just say, no, we're not going to participate in that?
Well, and I want to hear from Dr. Maloney, but let me just hit the participation point. Scott Hallenbeck is the executive director of USA Football. And he reports that flag football, which obviously has no tackling, grew 8.7% last year alone. Participation in tackle football, boys age 6 to 12, has fallen 20% since 2009. Now, it went up a little bit 2014 to 2015, but the bottom line is it's fallen about 20% since 2009, and that's according to the Sports and Fitness Industry Association. And so you have these questions on who's going to do what. But I think what Dr. Nicandri is pointing out is, even if flag football is growing, it still gets dwarfed by actual tackle football. 1.23 million kids age 6 to 12 are still playing it every year. So that's a lot of kids still playing it. Dr. Maloney, what do you think about modified football in different ways?
Yeah, again, I think it's a good step. It's highlighting, again, our understanding that these injuries are occurring, and that especially in the pediatric population, just developmentally, you know, you look at young athletes, their head is about the size of what it's going to be as an adult, but the rest of their body is still catching up. And so they are clearly at a higher risk for head and neck injuries in that population. And I think this is just an effort to minimize the force and the amount of contacts and repetitious contact. And I think it makes sense. And I think Greg brings up a good point. You know, if you're going to play traditional tackle football when you're in high school and college, and if you have aspirations for something beyond, you do need to learn proper technique at some point. I think that this is just an effort to try to minimize in that youth, you know, under high school population, that any type of head contact. And I get it. I understand why they'd want to do something like that. But football is not the only sport where we see these type of head and neck injuries. You know, gymnastics and even ice hockey, I think, has a rate that might be higher than football. So it's just, again, it's nice that we're talking about this, that we understand more about it. And the goal, again, is to protect youth athletes.
Yeah, and football is not the only sport that is seeing some modification for various reasons. You might remember at the Summer Olympics, the only rugby was rugby sevens. And my European friends kept telling me, that's not real rugby. I'm going, I don't really know how rugby is played. But there was some cynicism about rugby sevens. Fewer players, fewer athletes on the field. And is it accepted? It's an Olympic sport now. I don't know that we're going to see American football with 6 to 9 players or American football sevens, you know, at an elite level anytime soon. But, you know, Ashton, how much do you and, you know, your friends, you're 15 years old, how much do you guys talk about concussion, about injuries? I mean, is that something parents talk about, or do you guys talk about that?
Well, it, me and my friends, we talk about concussion. I know a lot of the kids on my team will know that they have some sort of like a light concussion, because, you know, a lot of kids on my team have had many concussions. And a lot of my friends who play hockey have had a lot of concussions as well. Between me and my friends, you know, we always talk about how they've learned to kind of brush it off and make it look like they don't have one, you know, after they get hit really hard or something like that. Wow. They get up and, you know, the trick is to not look dazed, you know.
Because otherwise they're going to pull you out of the game?
Yeah. If they can tell that you got rocked and you're not, you know, feeling it, you know, if you're sort of dazed out, they can tell, you know, if you're stumbling a little bit or, you know, kind of.
But let me ask you a question then. If you see, you play left guard, right? So who's the right guard? Who plays with you? Who's the right guard on your team?
Bobby Foltz.
All right. So Bobby, you know Bobby, right? Good guy. If you see Bobby get his bell rung, and he's trying to pass it off like he didn't, but you know he did, as a friend or a teammate, are you going to say, look, you got to get out for a while? You got to talk to the coach. You got to talk to a team doctor. Or are you thinking this is what everybody does?
Well, it depends. You know, there's a lot of variables that would go into that. You know, how far into the season are we? You know,
how big is the game?
Yeah, how big is the game? How far along in the game are we? You know, if it's towards the end, and it also depends on how bad, you know, it was that he got hit. If he were stumbling around and stuff, I'd probably say, yeah, you should probably go talk to the coach. But a lot of kids on my team are very good at, you know, brushing it off, as bad as that can be, you know. It all depends on how bad it is again.
Okay. But you're also admitting that the importance of the game, the game situation, could determine whether you, if it's yourself taking the hit, whether you put your hand up and say, I got my bell rung, or if it's your teammate and you say, look, you've got to get out of here. The game circumstance, you're saying, can impact that.
Yes.
If you're just being honest about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I certainly appreciate you being honest about it. I'm going to let Dr. Maloney lecture us on it. Dr. Maloney, what do you think?
Well, I think it's that whole, I hate to say this, warrior mentality that you don't want to acknowledge that you've been hurt. And I think, you know, young athletes don't appreciate the severity of these type of injuries. And I think irrespective of, you know, where in the season or where in the game or who you're playing, if you suspect a teammate sustained a head injury, you really got to make someone aware, whether it's the trainer or the coach. They need to be evaluated right away. And again, take the decision-making away from the pediatric or the youth athlete. Let the people who are trained to evaluate these do their job. You know, it's interesting at this level, this is the discussion, but there's also been discussions at the professional level. You know, they tried to have independent doctors in the NFL this year do the concussion evaluations. There's even discussion about having NFL Players Association or players having their own doctors on the sideline as opposed to the team doctors, that there's a conflict between the team doctors and doing what's best for the team versus doing what's best for the players. And it just brings up an interesting discussion about, you know, as physicians, we need to do what's right for that athlete. In the setting that's being described, those athletes need to be evaluated, and if they're safe to go back, we want them to go back if they're safe. But if they're not, they need to kind of adhere to the instructions and not have any more contact.
Dr. Nicandri made a point before the hour began that has not come up yet, and this is a good time to hit it, which is that whether you're talking about a head injury or even if you're talking about how many pitches a high school pitcher is throwing, you can end up with the kind of injury that you might see when you're 15, 16, 17. And you might not, or you might see it and deal with it, but it might manifest in different ways later, that there could be long-term effects that we're not seeing yet, right?
Right. So, they talk about cumulative trauma or cumulative subconcussive injuries with these concussions, where, you know, you're not even getting a real you know, concussion where you're knocked out or you lose consciousness, but you're taking a big hit. We don't really know, you know, how many of those or if there's a certain threshold or whether people are different, but it does seem to be that the more accumulation that occurs over one's life, the higher the risk of, you know, brain injuries later on, the, you know, the traumatic encephalopathy that we see in the NFL players. And, you know, there are studies to show that if you're getting more of those hits at a younger age and it starts younger, the risk is higher that you're going to have those problems as you're older. But it's not one hit that you recognize, well, this is the one that's going to cause the problem.
What I didn't want this hour to be is something that would scare parents into never wanting their kids to play sports. I actually think we've got two athletes here who've gone through a lot. They've got, in many ways, some very interesting. And listen, Ashton, I don't know about this whole taking the aggression thing out. I don't want to lecture on that. And I really appreciate you being honest with us about that. But you also talked about all the things that make football something that you want to be a part of. The team aspect of it, mm-hmm. the things that it can drive you to do. There's a lot positive out there. I didn't want parents to think that you should never do this. But we also want you to let you know that Catholic Charities Community Services is helping put together an upcoming conference on concussion. It's coming to Rochester. And Will Smith played Dr. Bennett Omalu, who kind of went up against the NFL to get head trauma protocols introduced in the movie Concussion. And he is coming for an event. Breakfast with Friends is Friday, March 3rd from 8 to 9:30 a.m. at the Rochester Hyatt Regency. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the annual Catholic Charities Community Services friend and fundraiser. So he'll be there. You can get tickets for that if you want to go meet the man who Will Smith played in that. And they also have a community conversation and an event focused on concussion starting at 6 p.m. on Thursday, March 2nd. That's at St. John Fisher College. They're aiming this one right at student athletes and parents. So that is, again, another event. The tickets are available for athletes, for parents, and they'd love to see you there. So Thursday, March 2nd at 6 p.m. at St. John Fisher College, or to meet Dr. Bennett Omalu, who's going to be the keynote speaker Friday morning at 8 a.m. at the Rochester Hyatt Regency, Breakfast with Friends for Catholic Charities and Community Services. So there's a lot of emphasis on this, but let's kind of start to wrap up here. And Dr. Nicandri, I don't want parents thinking we should never have kids play sports. In many ways, I think we should be amazed at what people like you and Dr. Maloney do when our kids get hurt. But what would you say to coaches? What would you say to the people who are in charge of our kids who may want to, as Ashton says, think about it's a late season game. This is a game we want to win. This is a playoff game. How do we get the culture to change to where it's about lifelong participation in athletics as opposed to a lot of emphasis on maybe overuse, possible injury, but winning this one game?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can't take away the emphasis on just sports in general in terms of, you know, overall physical fitness, health, you know, kids who play sports, there's less drug use, you know, they do better in school. It's a reason for, you know, some kids to stay in school. I think there's a lot of positive aspects that come from sports that, you know, you don't want to diminish or take away from. But I think it's upon us really as, you know, parents, coaches, athletic directors, you know, team physicians to make sure that people are aware of, you know, what the risks are. If there's ways to mitigate or prevent those risks, that we do whatever we can within reason to, you know, prevent injuries from happening. And, you know, that we just kind of educate and promote.
And Dr. Maloney, I'll let you offer some closing thoughts by responding to an email that I'll read from a parent that I just got. This is from Tim in Pittsburgh. He says, I admit I am a hypocrite when it comes to this topic, and I don't like that I am, but I'll just give you the schedule of our 8-year-old son as far as baseball goes and let you analyze. He started playing travel baseball last year at age 7, and his practices start the first week in January. It's once a week, but then we go at least one other day a week to hit in the cage. Once it hits April, they practice twice a week and also have games at least twice a week. Weekend games are always doubleheaders. The season goes through July, and with doubleheaders and tournaments, they'll play 35 to 40 games. Fall travel season will then start a month after the spring and summer league, and they practice once a week with games on the weekend for 10 weeks. The season ends around Halloween, and he will be off for a month. Then he'll go to a weekly baseball camp in December for a month. Then guess what? Spring travel season starts 2 weeks later in January all over again. He says, this schedule is not abnormal anymore for kids his age. He's already played more games at 8 than I played at 14. How can this possibly change to something more healthy? About a minute for you to respond to Tim in Pittsburgh. Dr. Maloney, go ahead.
It is tremendously challenging. The culture of our society and the emphasis on youth sports has really kind of risen in the last decade or so. The recommendations are pretty clear. Youth playing baseball should not be playing year-round. They should be taking at least 2 months off completely from baseball activities to allow their bodies to heal and recover and to develop normally. So I think this is a situation where I understand the desire to compete and to keep up, but as the parent, you need to advocate for your kids. You need to understand what the risks are. And I think a discussion or dialogue with the coaches, people have a greater understanding now. There is more awareness. And again, the emphasis should be on keeping these kids healthy, allowing them to participate. And when there's any concern about injury, that athlete has to feel comfortable enough to tell their parent, tell their coaches that something's not right and get themselves properly evaluated.
Dr. Mike Maloney, thanks for your time this hour.
Thank you.
Dr. Greg Nicandri, sports medicine physician at UR Medicine. Great having you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I would just say to Tim as well, you know, if I'm in your shoes, Tim, you're not going to win that battle on your own. I would grab parents of other athletes on those teams and get together, form a kind of coalition, and start to demand some changes, because those are really remarkable schedules. But look at the pressure on kids these days. Two remarkable athletes here, Ash and Fanagrossi. Good luck at not only your recovery from injury, but your future sports career. Great having you here. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Caleb Punter as well. Good luck to you getting the arm back in shape. We appreciate having you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon. We'll talk to you Thursday on member-supported public radio.